As we approach the end of 2018, I thought we could look back at RNIB's campaigning work. Now, each month we chat with Costa Asprey from the campaigns team, and we hear from some of the volunteer campaigners as well. So what we thought we'd do is look back at some of the big campaigns. What actually happens with the team? How do they work with Parliament to affect change as well? Well, I'm joined from our Camden studios by Costa. How are we?
Very well, Alan. How are you?
Good, yeah, not too bad. All here again. And we're going to look back at some of the big wins this year and really show how getting involved with the campaigns team can really make a huge difference. Now, a topic which comes up time and time again and has done over the years, because our landscape changes a great deal. We're looking at cluttered streets.
That's right. And this year we've brought you stories from many of our local campaigners about the issues affecting them in their area. A key issue across the UK is street clutter. We began 2018 with our Newcastle campaigners celebrating a victory after securing a street charter for their city. We know our streets could be much more accessible, but they remain a daily obstacle course for many. Getting to work, the shops, GP surgery, or accessing local services can be like running the gauntlet, with increased fear and anxiety and a real risk of injury as well. We know it's difficult to keep our streets obstacle-free, but we also know that our local authorities could do much more to make them accessible for everyone. That's why we've been calling on local authorities to engage with blind and partially sighted people in their area to develop a street charter that puts a clear highway policy at the heart of their local decision-making. And a clear highway includes clear pavements. A charter is a simple document showing a list of commitments, and a street charter lays out those agreed by the local council and campaigners regarding various street obstacles. By signing the charter, the local authority makes a pledge to implement the action points. We now have street charters in many cities and towns across the UK, with the latest one being signed just last month in Devon.
You know, it really shows with some of these big wins that getting involved, even for something in your local area, can maybe influence others to get involved as well and change things where they live as well. And I thought what we'd also do, of course, we're talking about cluttered streets here, just a mention about dockless bikes as well.
So dockless bikes, just to explain briefly, are a type of bike sharing scheme. And as the name suggests, they don't need to be returned to a fixed docking station like traditional bike sharing schemes. So when a user ends their journey on a dockless bike, the wheels automatically lock and the bike can be left anywhere, including in places that obstruct the pavement. Our London Regional Campaigns Officer, Karishma Shah, talked to us about this. The temporary and mobile nature of these bikes mean that blind and partially sighted people struggle to avoid walking into them. We are asking local authorities to firstly use the powers in the Highways Act 1980 to remove dockless bikes that cause an obstruction to the highway within 2 hours and issue fixed penalty notices to dockless bike operators if their bikes are causing a pavement obstruction. Secondly, to prosecute the operator if there is evidence that they are repeatedly and recklessly causing pavement obstructions.
Unbelievable that we have, you know, these dockless bikes. I mean, you think someone would have flagged up straight away when they're perhaps giving permission for these, that they're going to perhaps block streets, not just for sort of blind or partially sighted people, but anyone really out with prams or maybe wheelchairs, etc., or blocking roadways, because, you know, they can be, as you say, left anywhere or dumped anywhere is probably maybe a bit more of an apt word. So yeah, lots going on in the streets, Costa, and again, you know, we've had some big wins and still some things ongoing. We'll talk more about those next year, no doubt, as well. But let's move on to accessible information. You know, we're into, you know, IT, technology, the web, you know, smart devices. So getting info, you know, we're I suppose, consuming that in a different way now. And technology can make a huge improvement to the lives of blind and partially sighted people. But still, you know, you're having to campaign for even government departments, local authorities to make information accessible as well as the private sector.
And people tell us about being treated unfairly because reasonable adjustments are not being made to enable them to access services, such as having information in an alternative format. And that's why the Equality Act 2010 is designed to protect you from unfair treatment and to create a more equal society. No one should face discrimination because of being blind or partially sighted. So this year we've heard from Sheila Townsend in Essex, who asked for some crucial correspondence from the company that manages her property to be sent in large print. And when she did, she didn't expect to have to endure 2 years of tireless campaigning. But her challenge was successful, and she now receives information in a format that she can read. If you've had an experience like Sheila's, one of the ways you can challenge discrimination is by making a formal complaint using our Equality Act toolkit that's available on our website, and you can get in touch with us to request that as well.
2 years? That's unbelievable.
Right.
Just to get something in a format that you can read. And that was obviously successful, as Sheila told us, through working with the RNIB and the charity getting involved as well. So, yeah, big win there. Now, I know, of course, we spoke earlier about cluttered streets and bikes on paths and so on. But more and more now, we're also hearing about shared pathways where pedestrians are going to be sharing the walkways with cyclists. And again, you think initially that can be a bit of an accident waiting to happen.
That's right. And we're closing the year with another fantastic local victory, this time in Ealing in London, where the council proposed a new route for cyclists along a main road by changing a pedestrian footway into a shared use path. So we worked with local residents, including Rosemary in Ealing, to challenge this proposal. And in mid-November, the council withdrew its plan for the shared use pathway.
Brilliant news. Again, you know, for one person taking up the challenge and getting others involved as well, some big changes can happen. Let's leave the paths and the roads behind at the moment. Now, we've talked a lot on different shows and with different areas of RNIB about the importance of eye clinics and, you know, people getting their eyes checked regularly, getting the help and support they need, and spotting preventable sight loss. You know, if it's early intervention, you can save people's sight, but there still seems to be problems with that.
Exactly. And we do work to put pressure on the government to improve services at a national level, such as our campaign to improve access to hospital eye clinics. So earlier in the year, we told you about the failure in the National Health Service eye care system in England, where demand for ophthalmology has increased significantly in recent years due to our ageing population and the availability of new treatments. However, service provision is not keeping pace with demand, meaning that hospitals are delaying and cancelling appointments, resulting in people losing some sight. So we worked with the all-party parliamentary group, that's the APPG, on eye health and visual impairment, which is a cross-party group of MPs and members of the House of Lords. And they held an inquiry during 2017 into the issue of capacity problems in NHS eye care services in England, and released its finding in a report launched this June in 2018. We believe that the recommendations in this report, when implemented, will help to meet the increasing demands for eye care services and reduce the numbers of patients losing some sight because of delays.
So lots of work going on at a parliamentary level there, and with all the parties, in fact, getting involved in that cross-party group. That also extends to things like the benefit system, DWP, and PIP's always a bit of a hot topic.
Personal Independence Payment, or PIP, is a benefit which helps with some of the extra costs related to disability if you're aged 16 to 64. PIP is a crucial benefit. We've been calling on the DWP to firstly ensure the PIP assessment and decision-making processes are fair for blind and partially sighted people, and secondly, to make the PIP assessment process accessible, taking into consideration their individual needs. We continue to work with the department, and we eagerly await to hear from them in the new year about plans to make the claim process more accessible.
When we talk about the Department for Work and Pensions, people, I imagine, Costa, just probably think about payments, things like PIP. But they also have influence and have been asked to get involved with changes to technology. Again, we're looking at accessibility here.
It's important for us to keep tabs on what's going on in Parliament. And that's not just Prime Minister's Question Time, but also the activity of special committees and groups of MPs looking at specific issues, as you've just said. Select committees are of particular interest as they scrutinise the policy and practice of different government departments. We keenly follow the work of the Work and Pensions Select Committee, and they regularly examine the Department for Work and Pensions. Earlier this year, they carried out an inquiry and produced a report on assistive technology. This technology can be expensive, but the inquiry also probed into the potential for using personal independence payment to secure these tools that make work and civic life more accessible for blind and partially sighted people.
The RNIB Chair Ellie Southwood has also had to give evidence to Parliament, along with some service users and volunteers as well.
That's right. We had our chair, Eleanor Southwood, and two of our volunteer campaign coordinators, Mohammed and Amanda, to give evidence to the Treasury Select Committee inquiry to take action on improving accessibility of financial services. There were three key issues that were raised: the need for all information to be provided in a format that blind or partially sighted consumers can read, for ATMs to have accessibility built in, that's cash machines, and for online banking and apps to be fully accessible.
Back to, as you say, Costa, accessibility again, and giving people access, especially when it's their money at the end of the day as well. A huge variety of topics that RNIB's campaigns team do get involved with, Costa. And I suppose a lot of people probably don't actually know what goes on in the background. You know, you think of RNIB, they probably think of frontline services, you know, helping people with technology and training or whatever. They probably don't think a lot about the work that goes on.
That's right, and it is a lot of collaboration between members of staff, volunteer campaign coordinators, and ordinary campaigners on the ground speaking up and people raising their complaints using the Equality Act, as we've spoken about already today. So it's really across all of these fronts that we need to work to achieve change.
And the red tape that's politics, of course, as well.
Costa, right.
We always like to finish off by encouraging our listeners, in fact, anyone who knows someone or related to someone who is blind or partially sighted, to get involved in campaigning. If there's something that's causing you a problem, you know, don't put up with it. Get in touch with the campaigns team. They're there to help. They're there to answer any of your questions. But ultimately, you know, get involved as well. Become part of the team that can really facilitate some massive changes across the UK. If people want to do that, Costa, what's the best way?
Then it's important to bearing in mind that campaigning for change can take time, but the result and change is worth it, and it can be long lasting, and we can't do it without you. So if you'd like to get involved with campaigning, for example, to make your local area more accessible or on any of the issues we've spoken about today, we have some great resources to help you, and we can put you in touch with your local regional campaigns officer as well. Just visit rnib.org.uk/campaigns. Call our campaigns hotline on 0207 391 2123, or drop us an email at campaigns@rnib.org.uk.
Costa, great catching up with you. A bit of a roundup there of some of the big wins and indeed some of the ongoing work for RNIB's campaigns team. We'll catch up again in 2019, and hopefully some more good news will follow through the year as well. But for now, thanks for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio. Have a great Christmas and a great new year.
You too. Thanks very much, Alan.